south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, now for something a little different. You remember maybe 2 or 3 months ago I said, look, I'm trying out a new microphone. Let me know how it sounds. Well, I gave that one the good Yankee try, and I got lots of feedback from people, lots of emails saying, well, they heard some pops and clicks and sounded like it was a tunnel, and some said there were whispering winds and all that. So I decided to do a big upgrade to a Sennheiser mic. They're the best, seemingly the best. They're used in professional recording studios all over the world. In fact, I had a really nice Sennheiser when I was in groups playing on stage. The thing cost me something like $400. That's a lot for a mic because you can get, you know, a standard Shure mic. That's kind of the industry standard for rock and roll and on stage and stuff. The most well-known model of all being the Shure 58, something like $100. So to move up to a Sennheiser, German mic, kind of the upscale industry standard, well, not too many people do that when they're recording mobile or at home, that's for sure. Sounds great, but just too much dough. But I thought, what the hell, since I'm on show 909, yep, 909, I figured maybe it's time for an upgrade. Plus, I asked for people's opinions, and they didn't like my new mic. So why did I change in the first place? Well, my other mic was a Bluetooth mic, and you know, that's got a lot of EMF radiation. We'll get to that later. So then you might be thinking, if I've already got an expensive Sennheiser that I used in my rock bands, why not use it for the radio/podcast show? Well, because that's a big old hefty thing that screws onto a mic stand, and lately, in the past few months anyway, I've been on the road recording this from hotel rooms, Airbnbs, and apartments, and sometimes even on the beach. So I'm not going to lug that big old thing, weighs something like 5 pounds with me everywhere I go. Instead, I just took delivery of this Sennheiser headset, specifically made for radio and podcast, and it ain't cheap, but why not? And I got it thanks, of course, to Amazon, and you know, I really don't like Amazon. The fact that they're in bed with the NSA, and the fact that that Jeff Bezos guy seems to be a lifetime member of the I really need to get punched in the face club, like Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know what it is about certain people. Some have that absolutely glowing, beautiful, welcoming face. You just want to hang with the guy or gal. And then there's Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg, and George Soros for that matter. And by the way, practically every Latin American president. I mean, look at Raul Castro, Eva Morales, Daniel Ortega, every single president Mexico's ever had, all of them. They've just got that kind of face that begs for a fist sandwich. I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe I need the ass whooping. Who knows? But I'll tell you, for as wise ass as I can be, I've not actually gotten to a single fight since high school. And yes, I lost that one. The guy was older, bigger, and, well, a lot dumber, because I'm in Latin America having the time of my life, and he's in jail, a lifer too. One day, perhaps, I'll tell you how that went down. It's a good story, all right. Anyway, I'm trying out this new mic today. So let me know if it's up to your standards, if it meets your approval. But don't be too picky just yet. I'm still dickering with the controls on it. But I'll tell you this. The earphone part of the headset is really high quality. I know that because when I do the playback, I can tell. But you never know about your own voice. Not when it goes out in a podcast or on the air. And someone else is listening to it in the car in big city traffic with the sirens wailing and all that. And I know there's nothing worse than listening to a program when someone calls in on a remote line and it sounds like he's speaking through a tin can. Anyway, let me know. Enough said about that. So lately, you know what's really been bugging me? The fact that I've been reading all these blogs and getting all this information from first world news sources saying pretty much that the U.S. imperialism machine is responsible for bringing down Venezuela and causing all the grief, strife, and turmoil. Now, of course, there's no doubt that the U.S. is bent on regime change all over the world. You've got the CIA and the NSA's dirty little hands in virtually every foreign nation. Yeah, right, we can screw with their political system, but they better not screw with ours. Our kind of corruption's okay, but theirs is not. And of course, we know they're in Venezuela too. They've been there infiltrating and stirring up trouble since before the Chavez days. You've heard the stories. They tried to topple him too. There was nearly a coup something like 10 years ago. Remember that? CIA was responsible. It didn't work out. But the fact is, and I'm telling you, this is absolutely true. The U.S. doesn't have to go in there and stir up anything. Venezuela's crumbling fast and all on its own. It does not need any help. All it took was the corrupt socialist Chavez and Maduro regimes. But of course, the U.S. government has to stick their fingers in everything and give it a push. Though I hate all the first world media and their socialist apologists saying it's the U.S. that's toppling Venezuela. That's simply BS. I prefer to get the real news about Venezuela from Venezuelans. And I'm not talking about Venezuelans living in the U.S. or Europe who came over a long time ago. I'm talking about the Venezuelans I'm seeing everywhere in Latin America. I mean, there's millions of them that have left in the last couple of years. Why do you think that is? And what do you think they have to say about the USA and its involvement in Venezuela? Nothing. They absolutely never mention it. And believe me, when I run into a Venezuelan, and I do almost every single day now, especially when I'm in a big city, you remember, my Spanish is halfway decent, and I ask him, why are you here? What brought you to the point that you abandoned your own country and decided to live in uncertainty in another country where you're kind of in a limbo immigration status, you don't have permission to work legally, and in most cases, the locals are kind of upset that you're there because they think you're taking their jobs, etc., etc. So when I ask them that, they're very willing to tell me their stories. And sure, they list the usual suspects. The currency's crashed. The economy sucks. There's no jobs. There's not much on the shelves. Everything's terribly expensive, etc., etc. But I want to hear their own personal stories, and they do tell me. And it's all about corruption and the failure of socialism. That's it. And I know if you're listening to right-wing or conservative broadcasts up in the States, you hear that over and over, too, like a broken record. But you never hear the personal stories, like I do. For example, just a couple days ago, I ran into a young Venezuelan girl working at a hair salon. Yep, I have just enough hair in my head to pop into places like that once in a while. The fact is, there are thousands of Venezuelans working in places like hair salons, off the books, existing mostly on tips, but hey, you gotta eat. So she's dealing with it, and she's even able to send about $100 a month home to Venezuela. And she says $100 in U.S. money can feed a family of four for a month. So I said, what's your story? And her story was pretty typical of a lot of stories I've been hearing. First, you'll find if you bother to ask, it's not the average Venezuelan who picks up and leaves. It's usually the more intelligent, educated ones who figured out an escape plan and how to survive once they've skedaddled. Because, you know, the average slug in Venezuela, just like the average slug in the States, is not a chance taker. In their spare time, they're going to sit on the sofa, slug down beer, Diet Coke, and pizza, glued to sports, soaps, and the retardations. So the fact is, the millions of Venezuelans who've skipped the country so far represent a big creative and entrepreneurial brain drain for the country. Because in reality, the only ones that are left in Venezuela are people working for the malignant government, naturally, young children, single mothers, old men and women, you know, grandmas and grandpas that have lived so many years in their country, no matter what happens to it, they'll hang on. And some professionals like doctors, lawyers, accountants, etc., who are clever and have found ways around the system. With most of the rest of the people who haven't left yet, just everyday working class slugs. Oh, and there's a good percentage of Venezuelans back at home who are college and university students, too. They'd gladly leave if they had the means, that is the money, to get the paperwork and the proper documents to get out. Because right now, in fact, I was just told it takes 6 months of a regular average Venezuelan salary just to get a passport. So most of the Venezuelans that haven't left don't have passports, or at least a current passport. And without a passport, even if you snuck in, let's say, Colombia, Brazil, or Guyana, one of the three neighboring countries with a land border, you won't even be able to buy a cheap flip phone without a passport. So anyway, the point is, in the last few years, there's been a big brain and creativity drain out of Venezuela. You'll soon find that out if you have a conversation with a Venezuelan you meet in passing. You'll see they're educated, creative, and industrious people that have been treated like crap, and worse, by the socialist governments of Chavez and Maduro. For example, the Venezuelan hairdresser I was telling you about. She told me that around 10 years ago, when she was 16 years old, living in Caracas, Venezuela, she opened up a small clothing store in a retail mall. And by the time she was 21, she had four stores going in that mall. Then she moved on up to a nice high-end mall. Man, at 16, most of my friends had a hard time opening a can of tuna. Anyway, she said things were going great and she was going to open a fifth store. Then, about 3 years ago, Madero nationalized the shopping centers. She could have stayed, she said, but the government came in and fixed all the prices. And with inflation at triple digits. Suddenly, she said, the clothes in the store were selling for less than what she'd bought them for originally. and she had to keep the prices fixed or suffer a huge fine, go to jail, or even lose your store completely. So suddenly, she said, the investment she had in the store was worth nothing. She put them up for sale, but there were no takers because the value of the property was going down by the month. And it got to the point where every piece of merchandise she sold was worth less than what she paid for it. Worse yet, she said, when the government nationalized the place, they posted a sign on the door of every business saying, if you as a consumer saw that any of the merchandise in the store was being sold for more than the official sticker price, you were to report that store to the Office of Economic Development, and they gave a toll-free tattletale number, and the government wage and price division would come in, do a raid with the price-fixing Nazis, investigate, shut down the place, etc., etc. So the government fixed the prices, and for a while, she said, no one paid attention. And when someone brought a garment up to the cash register and said, for example, 90 bolivars, and you said, well, it's 120, they'd pay it. Because everyone had been somewhat used to big-time inflation, where prices changed weekly, even daily. And that went on, she said, for months and months, until the government cracked down and created economic hit squads that would raid your place if you didn't hold to the prices the government said you had to charge. So obviously, when it got to the point she was losing money with every item she sold, she just closed up and left. All right, let's bring this discussion full circle. When I mentioned earlier I'm sick and tired of reading first world blogs and media blatherings of how the U.S., specifically NSA, CIA, and any number of alphabet agencies, are responsible for instigating the downfall of Venezuela. Sure. They wanted to bring down the Chavez and Maduro governments because they weren't playing along with U.S. policy. Now, that's all true, and the U.S. covertly and clumsily tried to push that along. But let me ask you this. Regarding that little story I just related to you, where the government appropriates shopping malls, makes everyone fix all their prices, etc., etc., tell me, just what part did the NSA or the CIA play in that? How about zero? Nada? Nothing? In fact, it was a pure 100% socialist move, right out of the Marx and Engels playbook. What I'm saying is, next time you hear about how the U.S. is subverting Venezuela, and I know they've got their dirty little fingers in the protests on the streets, as well as pushing financial and other international trade sanctions and such, but again, let me ask you, what part does the U.S. play in nationalizing businesses and taking away people's livelihoods? Come on, someone tell me, how about some of you Chavez lovers like Oliver Stone, Danny Glover, or Sean Penn, who's also got one of those eminently punchable kissers? How about that fine specimen of a man, Michael Moore? Isn't it nice to know that the United States has become a place where entertainers and professional athletes are mistaken for people of importance and intelligence? Then there's Burnt Bernie and occasional Cortex, what can I say? And you know, when gringos and expats get together here in Latin America, we don't have much sympathy for what you're going through up there. You've seen the signs, the writing on the wall. You've been warned over and over again. In the end, you know, you get the government you deserve and the ass wipes you voted for. But you know, it's just too bad so few Americans speak Spanish. So when you run into a Venezuelan, you just can't start up a conversation and ask them why they left. But lucky for you, or maybe not so lucky for you, I'm that nosy guy out there who does the asking. And every time I'm able to squeeze a story like that out of a displaced Venezuelan, I double down on my disdain for Hollywood and the first world media. Oh, and by the way, just this week, another Venezuelan told me there is an insult going around that's full of irony. These days, he said, if you call someone a chavista, which in short means Hugo Chavez lover, it's like calling someone an idiot, a slap-in-the-face insult. So the word chavista is not thrown around lightly in Venezuela anymore. Used to be, 10 or so years ago when Chavez was around, a chavista was a positive word denoting a person who wants change. A progressive lover of Hugo Chavez. That was before the country went down the tubes. But now, this guy said, you call someone a chavista, you better get ready to defend yourself because the fists are going to fly. Who'd have thunk? So if you're in Venezuela and you look at big city graffiti, and there's lots of it now, you'll see that word chavista everywhere, but it ain't no compliment. Though to a foreigner, to the uninitiated observer, you'd think, well, they're just calling for a return of Chavez, right? Wrong. Today, in fact, it's a way of giving the finger to the long-dead Hugo Chavez and his policies that have ruined the country. In fact, it's strange, too, that these days you don't see graffiti that craps on Americans either. Used to be, and I remember seeing this myself, graffiti saying American imperialismo, Yankee go home, etc., etc. You just don't see that stuff anymore. not like he did in the Chavez days. Now it seems every single Venezuelan you talk to wants to live in the States. Yeah, surprise, surprise, because in Hugo's day, that'd be blasphemy, even treason. And it's a funny thing, you know, the U.S. media, as much as they say it, the U.S. is responsible for the economic destruction in Venezuela, the people on the streets aren't buying it at all. Sure, they see the U.S. government as a bunch of lying bastards, but they know that about their own government, too. Despite all that, most would love to live in the States, because they've all got a friend or relative living in Milwaukee or Cleveland who's doing all right. Often more than all right, because, as mentioned, Venezuelans are much more educated than your average Latino. However, because they're smart, they also see the U.S. turning in the direction of socialism. They see that the polls coming out of the U.S. say that most young people and college students in the U.S. see socialism as cool, fashionable, and the wave of the future. And they just can't believe young Americans would be so stupid. Oh man, am I glad I'm living far enough away from the first world to sit back and watch it implode from a nice safe distance. Where have I heard that before? Which begs the question, how's your plan B coming? All right, let's dive into a few emails now. This one's from Susan. She says, Saludos, Johnny. I've fallen a few weeks behind on listening to your shows for various reasons, and I'm way behind on making comments and requests for things you've offered on your shows. So I've been saving up my notes until I could get around to emailing you. You've offered up so much good stuff, I hardly know where to start. So here's a list of what I'm interested in, if it's not too much trouble for you. Number one, what's the best portable EMF meter you recommend? All right, me, Johnny, here. You know what she's talking about. EMF meters. EMF is electromagnetic field. In other words, it's a meter to measure the strength of the magnetic fields around you. Like, for example, coming from smart meters, cell phones, Wi-Fi, etc. And you know, the more intense it is, the more it damages living things. In fact, it's been proven in many scientific studies to damage chromosomes. Now, as far as EMF meters, you can get them on Amazon. That's probably the cheapest way to go, but you're not going to get one that's really accurate or useful under $100. But thankfully, I found one, and I'm using one that's really good for around $120. But believe me, it covers everything. Problem is, you see, you can go on Amazon and get one for $20 or $30 or $50. But it's all about the frequency range that they detect. The cheaper ones only detect up to maybe 1 to 3 gigahertz at the maximum. And cell towers are putting out at 2 gigahertz and up. Same with smart meters, Wi-Fi signals, and the new 5G, which is really bad for you. So I'll give you my recommendation of a meter that's actually made in Seattle, Washington. So when you go on Amazon, you can see a really nice little video of the guy explaining all those signals to you and what you got to look for and what the maximum permitted levels should be that you can live with. And he also explains U.S. government rated safe limits are not safe at all. Then he explains what the safe levels really should be. So my pick for the best all-around and cheapest EMF meter, and I have one of these, is the Advanced GQ-EMF-390. So if you just go to Amazon and put in EMF-390, it should come up. By the way, in the near future, I'm going to take this little meter and break it down for you on the show. In other words, I'll explain it all in plain English. I used to be an engineer in a past life, so I can do that. Now, if you want to know the full title and description of this EMF meter, so you don't have to remember all this, it's called the Advanced GQ-EMF-390 Multifield Electromagnetic Radiation 3-in-1 EMF ELF RF Meter, comma, Cell Tower, Smart Meter, Hidden Wi-Fi Signal Detector with RF frequencies up to 10 gigahertz with data logger and 2.5 gigahertz RF spectrum analyzer built in. I know it's a mouthful and it's way more than a person really needs at home, but it's the fact that it reads EMF signals up to 10 gigahertz. That's the important part, because you see, the cheaper meters won't reach that high, so you'll never be able to get those hidden Wi-Fi signals or those dirty smart meter and 5G readings. But don't worry about that. In an upcoming show, I'll explain how it works and what the limits I think you should not exceed. Now, the thing is, when you're walking around the house, checking all your Wi-Fi routers out and stuff, if where you're sitting normally in your house, for example, is an area that's a real hot spot, you just move some of your devices around, and it'll change things dramatically. Anyway, I'll give you a better overview on that in an upcoming show, so hang on. All right, back to Sue's email. She says, Johnny, please send me the packet of info regarding stem cell treatments, your link for solar AC units, including the portable ones, your portable water filter plans, including the Sawyer mini water filters. And then she asks, does the Sawyer mini water filter remove fluoride? No, Sue, it doesn't. You have to get a special filter canister for that. And I know Berkey makes one. It's over $100, though I don't know how long the filter lasts before you have to replace it. Because, you see, I don't care about fluoride because I'm in Latin America, where no country fluoridates the water. By the way, what I absolutely love about that Sawyer water filter is that it lasts a lifetime. It's guaranteed for 1 million gallons. Now, some people say 100,000 gallons. If you go on a website, it says 1 million. Now, you have to wonder, how is that possible? Well, go on the website, and they have a nice little video there so you can see the mechanism inside and why it works that way. Now, the thing is, like any filter, it'll end up getting clogged with particles sooner or later. But you see, when you buy that filter, now it comes with a little plastic barrel-type syringe without the needle. So when your filter starts getting clogged, and you'll know that because the flow slows down, then you just fill up the syringe with water, screw it onto the filter outlet, hit the plunger. That'll blow out the particles from the other end. Then you're good to go again. For how many gallons thereafter? Well, who knows? It all depends on when the flow starts slowing down again. Could be 10, 100, 1,000 gallons. Depends on how dirty your supply water is at the input. All I know is I've been carrying my little Sawyer portable water filter everywhere I go for the past, I'd say, 5 years, and I've only had to back flush it that way one time. Oh, and remember, if you're buying your Sawyer filter off Amazon or you're getting it directly from the company, you won't see that little attachment that I've added on to it to get rid of the bad taste and the organics. Because, you know, some water has a bad taste, and Sawyer filters won't take that out. They just take out the bacteria, viruses, cysts, etc. So I've rigged up a little add-on charcoal filter $20 accessory that you just unscrew and load up with granulated charcoal. Then even if your water smells like rotten eggs, it'll remove all that, plus nasty dissolved organics, that'd be pesticides and herbicides, etc. And it'll last for the next 50 to 100 gallons that you're filtering. So how do you know when to change to charcoal? Well, if your water doesn't stink, you'll never know, but I change it about every 50 to 100 gallons. You just unscrew the thing, dump the charcoal out, and put a new batch in. By the way, when you plug that thing into a faucet, it's got a little rubber cowl that slips right on. My suggestion is to turn the water on really slow so it dribbles out of the filter. That way it gets the most time to be in contact with the charcoal granules. That's, again, to remove the bad taste, if any, and absorb organic chemicals if there are any present. So let it dribble really slowly, about the thickness of a toothpick. And even at that rate, you should be able to fill up a gallon of water in 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, who cares? A gallon of water every 5 to 10 minutes? No problem. However, you can turn up the water pressure and get a nice, fast flow and fill up a gallon of water in 30 seconds. But then you'll be defeating the purpose of having the charcoal, because you want the water to pass through that very slowly. You get the picture. Oh, and one more thing. It's very important to note. When you buy your granulated charcoal, you can get that from Amazon too, or in a fish supply store. They use it for aquariums. Always buy granulated charcoal made from coconut hulls. It's got to be from coconut hulls. Don't buy the stuff that's made from coal or what they call bituminous rock carbon. Though they look absolutely the same, the granulated carbon that's made from coal has been processed and adulterated and has been treated with other unknown industrial chemicals, whereas charcoal made from coconut hulls is absolutely organic, untouched, and unprocessed. It'll even say on the package it's food grade, but it's got to be carbon made from coconut hulls. By the way, if you have an under-the-counter water purification system like I have too, or you buy the 9-inch filters that slip into the canisters, your last stage will always be a carbon block filter. And what do you think that's made out of? Coconut hulls. You'll see it right on the label when you buy it. All right, then Sue says in her email, please send me a link to Chris's Airbnb on Lake Atitlan. That was a while ago, I know, but please send it. Also, do you have a history of the conquistadores on ebook for Kindle and audiobook, or any other interesting audiobooks? All right, Sue, me Johnny here. What a question. I must have 100 really great audiobooks. But you know, those audiobooks are very big files, sometimes up to a gigabyte. And it's a pain in the ass sending them over the internet. Ebooks, no problem. But the audiobooks, a big problem. Oh, and as far as the history of the conquistadores, I had a terrific one. Gave it away a long time ago, and I don't have it on ebook form. Anyway, what I'm thinking about doing is this. Taking all my audiobooks, putting them on a big flash drive, so that when I run into some of you gringo expat listeners on my travels or at my seminars, I could just pass it on to you, and you can download it right there into your computer or smart device. But as far as sending individual audiobook files online, that takes a long time. It's a pain in the ass. All right. Then Sue says, I regularly take advantage of audiobooks available from my state's digital library. And she says, I figured out a hack how to sequester them so that they don't take them back at the end of the loan period. That's cool. But she says they don't always have what I'm looking for. Well, you know what, Sue? You can solve that problem by getting online with a lot of different audio public libraries. For example, I've got a membership to the Chicago Public Library and the Cleveland Public Library, courtesy of Captain Mango. So what one might not have, the other usually does. And man, I'll tell you, the Chicago Public Library is very, very complete because it's Chicago and it's a huge city. So I think, Sue, if you went online and you signed up at a big public library like New York, Chicago, Atlanta, LA, you'll get everything you want. Oh, by the way, when you go online to get your so-called virtual library card, you'll have to give them an address in that locality. So how do you do that? Well, just do a search for a restaurant in that area. I've done it. It works. And, for example, if they're checking your IP address, you know, some companies do that when you order stuff like Amazon. They know exactly where you are. You can run it through a VPN and pick the IP address you want and be right within that locale and bypass any kind of disqualification problems you might run into there. Oops, I see we're getting towards the end of the show, so I'll finish up Sue's email requests and such next show. By the way, when she wrote me this email, I wrote back saying, Sue, I'm never going to be able to type an answer out to you. I'll get carpal tunnel. So being that you're an expat insider, seminar alumni, and repeat offender, I'll gladly answer all your questions because, you know, she's got an in with me. She's a friend. She's been to a couple of seminars. But instead of getting carpal tunnel, I'll get it out to everyone on the show. After all, it is an email of general interest to practically everyone who's looking for a plan B. Speaking of getting the hell out of Dodge, you know, if you want a 2 to 5 year head start on that plan B, just come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. Next one starts January 10th, coming up in about a month and a half. And remember, I've still got the early bird discounts in effect till December 1st, so you've only got a couple of days to save $500 off the regular price. Oh, and don't forget, you could save $750 off the single price if you hook up with a roommate. Normally, I've got a few people looking for that option. So if you're looking for a roommate, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. For all the seminar info and sign-up details, just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on the seminar link or go to www.theexpatfiles.com/seminar. Oh, and one last thing. When you sign up, you get a one-hour phone consultation with me before the seminar where we can talk about anything and everything having to do with the seminar or anything else. Like stem cells, healthcare, insurance, residency, cryptocurrencies, gold, bank accounts, or even hanging with the shamans and doing ayahuasca. Just don't get me started on rap or reggaeton. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.